The Knotts Company welcomes you back to Focus on Automation, where we explore and celebrate advances that empower manufacturing. Welcome back to Focus on Automation. I'm your host, Todd Youngblood. Thank you to our sponsor, The Knotts Company. They provide technology, products, integration, machine building, and other services for increasing the performance, productivity, and profitability of manufacturing enterprises. Today, we're going to dive right into that sort of topic and take a very close look into a technology that frankly has fascinated me personally for a long time. There's been such tremendous development in it, robots. And to help us understand the reality of all that, I'm joined by what I'll call an expert. He wouldn't call himself that, but I will. Mr. Silas Neal. He's Channel Development Manager for Universal Robots. Silas, thanks for joining us.
Todd, thank you for the generous introduction. I appreciate that. And then certainly a thanks to the Knotts Company for having me on today. I appreciate that very much.
Well, one, I've got to ask you about your background a little bit, because I mean this with, I say this with a smile. You've got an oddball background to be in the robot business. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into UR.
Right. So yeah, full disclosure, not an engineering major, if you will. I went to school for criminal justice, graduated in 2006. And got into the Denver Police Academy and got rolling towards law enforcement. And that was right when things collapsed, right? End of 07 into 08.
Yep.
So that put a hold on things. And I started slinging skis at Sports Authority for something to put food on the table while I figured out what was next, and had a store there within, you know, a year and a half or so. And so I, by default and out of pure enjoyment, found myself in the brick and mortar operations throughout my 20s. And then I opened a store for Dick's Sporting Goods, I don't know, around 2012 or so in Missouri. Spent a couple of years there. And my golf manager left and he went to Keyence, who's a familiar name within the automation space. And he called me after a couple months and he said, "We've got an opening back in Boston." He and I had had years of conversations about moving towards that space because it's something that I've been fascinated by and research, despite not having that background. And he set me up with a great opportunity with Keyence. And so moved at the age of 30 into the automation space, got some good machine vision background. And about 2 years ago, I was working on a project with Cognex in their machine vision. And it was an overlapping project with UR, and developed some great relationships with the team at UR. And that led me to this opportunity here. So look at this. I'm happy as can be. It's a technology that I'm fascinated by, right? So I'm up late flipping through pages, just reading, studying. Yeah.
You sure you want to get that piece of information out? Flip bedtime reading about robots, right?
That's right. Yeah, that's how exciting things are for me. Yep.
Oh gosh, just that, you know, there might be three or four people in the universe that have not heard of Universal Robots. For those four or five folks, give us a quick 50,000 foot overview of UR.
Absolutely. So we're a Danish company, started with some Danish grad students many years ago, wanted to automate a pizza shop and realized they wouldn't be able to do that safely by means of traditional automation. So they started working on a force and power limited robot. Fast forward 15 years, we've got over 50,000 collaborative robots deployed out there. We have about 50% of the market share, and we have the best partners out there from an integrator and from a distributor standpoint as well. Yep.
Make a distinction, just definition-wise, so we have the mechanics straight, the difference between a robot and a cobot, a collaborative robot.
So with traditional fixed automation, that's going to be your fixed installs where you're physically separating the automation from human beings with cages. You might have light curtains and safety, right? So those are essentially blind robots that are just doing usually a fast and repetitive task. So with a force and power limited cobot or collaborative robot, you're able to work around safely with humans. And so a lot of times you're starting to see that automation working alongside humans is becoming the new norm. So there's the safety aspect to the collaborative robots, but what a lot of customers are attracted to with cobots and our product is that they're flexible. You can use them for a lot of different processes, and then you can redeploy them. So we have customers that'll move a robot from their CNC machine over to a packaging machine, deburring machine, and they're able to do a lot of different applications with a single robot.
Yeah, I'm an old manufacturing guy, so I have this habit of walking into a production facility and saying, okay, where are the constraints? Where are the problems in that production process? And I see, since we're on Zoom, I see you nodding your head in agreement. So maybe you've got the same perspective that I do. But talk about, if I'm a production manager, I'm out in my production facility, what kind of constraints, what kind of problems should I be on the lookout for that might be addressable with this cobot technology?
Sure. So the most common thing that we see when we walk through a facility and we do a floor walk or an audit with a client is they have a big project, a big headache, something that's really burning at them. And it can be really cumbersome. We want to bring down a vacuum and pick up this part and flip it over and deburr it and then move it farther up, you know, downstream for more processing. But behind them, they have a CNC machine where somebody's just loading a part, press and go, and then they're text in for a couple minutes, waiting for the part to finish. So we find that low hanging fruit. And if you think about like a CNC machine, for example, you're running a lathe two shifts, you're paying somebody probably 55, 60 grand, if not more, to have someone just standing there loading parts every couple of minutes. That's something that we can automate for that particular customer. You're talking 6 to 8 months payback on something like that. So we can start with that easy opportunities like that and help folks out with identification there.
So, I mean, that would be an easy thing to spot, operator idle time. I don't know if that's the right way to characterize it.
I think that's great verbiage. Operator idle time. Absolutely. Repetitive tasks. Where do you have someone that's just standing there doing the same thing over and over again? We can automate that quickly and competitively.
Yeah, now it's interesting that leads directly to what in some circles is a sensitive topic, is that, you're going to bring in robots and you're going to eliminate jobs and all these people that are out there dependent on that to make their living, and you're just going to boot them out the door.
Of course. You can imagine being a robot salesman that I've got some.
You heard that before?
I've heard that before. Yeah, I make this statement without any supporting data in front of me, but approximately 9 out of 10 customers that we're selling into in our territory, they're not replacing people. They either have labor shortages where they simply can't find people. They try and try and try. They're offering tremendous amounts of money for what are ultimately unskilled labor positions. But what we really see is that most customers want higher throughput. Right. If you're making parts and you can make more parts in a shorter amount of time, that's advantageous. So if we look at a couple of different studies over the last few years, on average, a human with a collaborative robot can be 85% more productive. So they're having a robot essentially act as a tool. So I like to tell folks, you can think of a collaborative robot as a tool, very similar to a hammer or a wrench or a screwdriver or similar, and you can increase the throughput, but you also get repeatability at the same time out of it.
Well, yeah. You may have just, I was going to take you back to the question of constraints and problems before, and then you just said that word repeatability. That strikes me as a challenge, which means a problem. Talk a little bit about how a robot cobot's going to address that repeatability issue.
Sure.
So quality is what we're talking about.
We're talking about quality, right? Absolutely. A robot with 30 micron repeatability, that's always going to position a part in the same exact place every single time. It's always going to apply a certain amount of force the same every single time. So even those simple repetitive tasks, like holding a part against a deburring tool or a polishing wheel or something like that, you're applying an equal amount of force consistently. You're going to get that repeatability out of the parts that you simply can't get with a human operator. After an 8-hour shift, their eyes are killing them. They're exhausted. They've been on their feet all day long. Let them sit and do the assembly of those components that you just polished with a robot.
Right. More complex tasks is where I want to put the human. And I'm just wondering if there has ever been a human operator that could maintain 30 micron tolerances. I don't think anybody could do that twice in a row ever.
And they probably cost a lot more than a robot.
And they cost a lot more. Yeah. What other kind of issues and problems should I be looking for if I'm the production guy?
Certainly overall machine uptime, right? What does that look like for you? So that's a conversation we like to have with a lot of customers. What is the overall effectiveness of that machine? How often are you making chips, right, on your CNC? That's a big question that we ask. And a lot of folks find themselves in, below 50%. So that's something that we can help out with a collaborative robot. It's just, if you're not making chips, you're not making money. So what does the overall machine uptime look like?
Well, and let's go back. You touched before on a payback period, and I don't remember exactly what you said, but I know it was some number of months for payback on a robot. I've heard that before, and it always strikes me as, huh? I think in payback period that I measure it in years typically, and I think you said months.
So overall for us, globally with Universal Robots, machine tending as a category is in the mid 35, around 35% to 40% of what we do. And the average payback for machine tending is about 10 to 11 months in that range. It's going to be less than that. You're talking 8 to 9 months on average for CNC machine tending. Quality inspection with a collaborative robot is a really quickly growing space for us. So when you think about customers that have someone in a quality lab inspecting parts, those are expensive people. So if you can either present parts to a camera with a robot or present a camera and have it snap multiple images, we're seeing a lot of growth within inspection. That's under 12 months overall from a payback standpoint.
I mean, I guess I've done so many business cases for so many different kinds of investments. Are people skeptical about those numbers, or are there enough case studies out there now that say, yeah, it sounds kind of hard to believe, but it's really for real? Maybe you can talk us through a specific example or two.
Yeah, we almost have too many case studies. I'll use an example of one of my customers here in Rhode Island, because we're getting ready to publish a case study. So they're a full pore foundry. They manufacture fittings essentially for plumbing, and they do all of the cast, they do it all in-house from the full pore all the way to the packaging. And they were running a threading machine on a carousel. So they'd load up the parts, and they just had someone standing there all day loading up the carousel. And then they put a UR10 in there and started running.
A UR10 is what exactly?
A UR10, a 10 kg robot of ours.
About got it.
100 millimeter reach. So yep. our more substantial robot, they automated with a UR10 and had it just loading from a 10 by 10 array of parts. And they are now, fast forward 12 months, they put in one of our bin picking systems, a next generation machine loading system, if you will, of ours called Actinav. And it's picking these parts out of a bin and just loading it into the carousel. And they can run 34 hours plus off of a bin of parts. So they just put a bin of parts next to this threading machine, and they just walk away from it for, over 30 hours at a time. So their payback is a different kind of an animal, because they're making parts for 34 hours in a row before they even have to stop. Right.
That's pretty amazing.
Yep.
Well, any other application examples pop to mind? That one's pretty cool.
Yeah. If we talk about the machine tending space, the packaging and palletizing inspection, these are all applications that we do pretty regularly. We can have great conversations with a lot of supporting data for customers that talk about exactly what the payback is going to be, exactly what the integration cost is going to be, and help them justify that. We're starting to get into a lot of applications where we're working with a customer in the Northeast who manufactures kayaks, and they're using a robot to sand the outside of the, prep the outside of the kayak prior to painting, for example. So anywhere you can think of a robot as being a tool, we're going to be able to automate that for you.
Got it.
Yeah.
You just used a word that always says expensive in my mind, and that word is integration. When I think of systems integration, I'm combining, you used the quality inspection example a little bit earlier. I guess I got a two-part question. I'd like you to address the challenge. How tough is it to do the systems integration? And that a related thing to that is, how tough is it to train people to program all these robots and get the thing set up and running to begin with, and, you know, changeovers on lines and things like that?
Sure. Yeah, we spoke about it when we first got started. The ease of use of our robots is definitely what draws people to our product. Excuse me, there's no question about that. So when you talk about the integration, we have customers, end users, that prefer to manage the entire integration process themselves. They have the in-house skills, the right engineers, and our partners and I will help them out with that. We have some who maybe have a little bit of engineering experience and a limited amount of bandwidth. We have our distributors that offer value add, where we collectively can work together. And then we have customers that want a full turnkey system, totally delivered, pushed up to their machine, signed off on, and ready to go. And customers anywhere in between. But we've been doing this long enough and have such a good breadth of different applications that we can solve that we use the verbiage lean integration, right? So we have a very good idea of what it should cost to automate a lathe and a mill and so on. And we can bring, you know, really competitive packages together from some of our integration partners.
Well, and I would think that level of experience, I mean, getting back to the payback and the financial aspects of it, if some of that integration is already pre-packaged, if you will, from you guys, from UR, that, I mean, that's just, is that much more cost savings in the design, the cutover, getting a new application up and running?
Absolutely. I'll use an integration partner of ours out in Fort Collins, Colorado, as an example for the welding space, Vectus Automation. They're out in Colorado, and they have a great pre-engineered solution available on a Rhino cart with a UR10 10 kg robot on it. They offer a number of different power supply options for it. And to your point, it's pre-engineered. It's ready to go. They just have to make the fixturing for the customer. They roll that off of a truck and a customer's welding parts in, you know, a day and a half, 2 days at most. And
Silas,
it's competitive.
This may sound like an oddball question, but I just have a sense in talking with you, there's a level of enthusiasm in your whole demeanor, which just strikes me as a little bit out of the ordinary in a very positive way.
Sure.
Is there a reason for that?
Well, sure. I love what I do, right? I get to talk to great partners and great customers on a daily basis. You know, for me, I enjoy seeing the light come on when we talk to customers, right? So we have, when I'm sitting down and talking about a project with a small to medium enterprise, right? That 5 to 10 person shop, maybe they're struggling with labor, or maybe they just can't keep up from a production standpoint. And I really enjoy seeing that light come on when they get it, right? They have that first robot installed, they see it running for 24 hours and they go, okay, I get why we just spent this money. Makes perfect sense. There's definitely a level of satisfaction in that. No question.
That's cool. That's cool. I mean, that popped up another thought in my head. You said 5-10 person shop. And I've got to acknowledge and admit that I've had the impression that a shop that small, oh my gosh, we're too small to look at robots. Obviously not. I mean, how small an operation can an investment in a robot system? How small can you get to justify it?
So what's unique about collaborative robots is that they open the doors for anybody. Anybody who's logically minded that can use an iPhone can learn to program our robots.
Even me.
Absolutely. Even my first grader, who will pop in here after school now and then and do a little pick and place. Don't tell you are. But my first grader, right, loves to do pick and place applications with the demo. So it opens up resources, right? It provides even a one-person shop with more resources, because we can sit down with anybody and work them through how to put together an application.
I mean, that's fascinating. I'm old enough to remember. I started my career selling computers for IBM. And in those days, it was mainframes. That's all there was. And I remember the transformation to the personal computer and the idea of having a PC with one human being. I mean, is that a valid analogy?
I would say absolutely so. Yep.
That's interesting.
And we see it all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to make sure we talk a little bit about differentiation. I think I'm aware of at least one other robot manufacturer out there. Talk a little bit about why Universal Robots is different and better.
So Universal Robots, we're on our fifth generation of robot, right? So we've been at it for a really long time. So we have an established product, an established platform. So any kind of software bugs that you might come across, any, you know, stops in the middle of the night, we've overcome all of those. And with this robot that I have behind me, this came out in 2018. It's our E-Series. It's a very stable platform. What makes us really unique is, I don't know if you can see on the shelf behind me, but I have a couple of different grippers back there. We have this ecosystem of peripherals, right? Things that you would, end of arm tools. That's what makes an application, whether it's a two-finger gripper or a vision system or a suction cup. And we have this huge ecosystem of certified partners. And we've opened up our programming environment and we've allowed them to write CAPS, apps, like you would see on your iPhone. So any of these peripherals that you see on our website, our end users can, or our integrators can program those peripherals right on the teach pendant. And so that makes the application simplicity that much more. So that's going to be a huge, huge delta for us. Yeah.
Well, that's interesting that you say that, because you've taken systems integration up to another level. It's one thing to have the human being, the engineer that knows how to do the systems integration. You've packaged not only the gripper, the hardware, the robot. It sounds like you've also integrated a lot of the programming and a lot of the engineering and the thought process behind it. That's very cool.
That's right. And we've also taken those products and we've certified them. We've run them through the paces. UR has gotten their hands on them and tested out the software, tested the hardware. So we're delivering, you know, a package.
One more thing I want to pick your brain about before I let you go, Silas, and that's pull out your crystal ball, pull that out from the desk drawer there and look out over the next 3 to 5 years. What do you see coming at us in terms of the technology and maybe applications?
So specific to collaborative robots, I think you're going to see a big expansion in overall applications that we can solve, right? So well beyond your packaging and palletizing and your welding, I think we'll see tremendous growth in the welding space. I mean, there are huge numbers of shortages expected when it comes to the welding space, right? But robots that can weld can be a tool for existing welders. So I think we're going to see a huge growth within that space there. And then certainly mobile robots as a whole within the robotic space is expected tremendous growth.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Silas Neal, Channel Development Manager for Universal Robots. Thanks for taking the time to share some of your insights. It's pretty, pretty exciting stuff. Heck of an interesting story.
Thank you, Todd. I appreciate your time this afternoon very much.
That wraps today's episode. On behalf of my guest, Silas Neal, our sponsor, the Knotts Company, I'm Todd Youngblood. Talk to you again soon.